What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello, how you doing? I'm Craig Parkinson. You are listening to the Two Shot Podcast. Sit yourself down, pop the kettle on. We're going to have a nice old chat. Who's it with this week? I'm going to tell you right now. How the devil are you? It's February, it's still freezing, but this is the Two Shot Podcast. And I'm thrilled you're here. Honestly, thanks for downloading and subscribing. Sorry, I'm just looking at my cat. He's fast asleep on the settee just opposite me. So if he does wake up and there's a lot of meowing, which he does tend to do a lot, then I can only apologise. Thanks a lot for the messages and the emails and the tweets for last week's episode. What a cracker with Dave, with our kid. I know he was really touched and really moved with the love and support that you sent him, and it means a lot to all of us, so thanks a lot. I said on Twitter that I was a bit nervous about putting it out. Not that it wasn't a brilliant episode, it was, obviously, but because we'd set it up that I was talking to a lot of actors, you know, from June last year right through up until the other week. To put a non-actor out, I thought, oh, is that going to put people off? People are going to like it. But, you know, that was just me worrying, because what we're doing on the podcast is we're just highlighting people's stories. And the one theme that they all have is that they're all creatives. So whether they're actors, they're poets, they're musicians, they're artists, they're directors, they're writers, you know, that they're all coming on, because a human story is a human story. And that's what I like, and it's what you seem to like. So why don't we just carry on doing it, yeah? Yeah. Bit of a weird week last week. Not weird, like dead nice. I was talking to a lot of lovely journalists. I was doing a bit of press about the podcast. And it was funny going back to, a lot of people were asking how it started, when it started. So I was going right back to kind of this time last year, before myself and producer Griffith even met. It was all emails. So that was quite nice to think how far we've come from that first email and that first meeting in the Britain's Protection in Manchester. If you haven't been to that pub, you really should go. It's lovely. Enough about pubs. I want to say a big thank you to Phil Williams and Hannah Gundry-White at Five Live. They said a lot of nice things about the podcast. I'm not going to wax lyrical about it. But thank you so much, guys, for having me on your brilliant show. Always check out Phil Williams live every night on Five Live. He's a fantastic bloke. Now, from yesterday, some news broke. And I can tell you right now, because it's Thursday, and this happened yesterday, on Wednesday, the Two Shot Podcast is going to be live at the Kendall Calling Festival. Now, if you don't know, if you've never been to Kendall Calling, then crikey, you are missing out. As a punter, it's one of my favourite places to go. Great bands, great people, great food. Just a fantastic vibe. It always has been. It's not getting bigger, it's just getting better, and that's what we want. So we are going to be live at the end of July at Kendall Calling. A lot of tickets are already selling out, and we are going to have some fantastic guests live with us at Tim Peake's Diner, which is the place to be. I mean, oh, it's a lovely, lovely place. I've got lots of lovely friends there who I've made friends with over the years, and they've been so supportive of what me and Griff do on the podcast. And now we're there. We're one of the guests. And speaking of guests, crikey, I'm lining up some absolute belters. And I'm not even going to say anything. I'll see you there at Tim Peake's Diner. Get you a cup of tea, your cup of coffee, whatever you want, and we'll be there. What else? Of course, tonight, if you're listening to this on Thursday, right, when it's going out, tonight is the night we are live in Liverpool with tremendous support from the majestic Arkid and a lovely chat. Well, we'll see how it goes. It's going to be brilliant. I'm so excited. With Ingrid Oliver, she's coming to Liverpool to hang out at the Baltic Social with me and Griff. And you, if you're there, if you've got tickets, I'm pretty sure it's sold out by now. But who knows? Look, if there's any returns or anything like that, I'll throw it out on our Twitter feed and you can turn up and get your tickets. But as I say, I think it is sold out. I've been rambling enough. Shut up, Craig. Let's get to the episode. This is episode 29, okay? I'm not going to blather in the middle. Let's just take it right through. Producer Griff's going to work his magic, put on some lovely little jingles in between. But this is... We went to Manchester to go and have a brew with a very, very close friend of mine. I've known her for years. And she's one of the best, one of the best people, but she's also one of the best actresses I know. And I love spending time with her. My cat's just woken up. It's Christine Bottomley. I think you're going to really love her honesty and her warmth. She's one of the most normal people I know. Normal, that sounds terrible, doesn't it? What I mean is she's really down to earth. And she's never changed. And she's an award-winning actress and a beautiful, beautiful human. I love her to bits, and I'm thrilled that she came on. And after that, we popped in the motor. And Radcliffe, I'm trying to do this podcast. Can you hear him? We popped in the motor, and we got caught in a snow blizzard going over to Sheffield, a big favourite of mine for loads of reasons. There's a few episodes down the line which we'll talk about that. And we went to the Crucible Theatre and met somebody I'd never met before. It's Remy Milner. Now, she, as you'll be able to hear, comes across as very warm, funny, full of life. And she is. So we've got an actress who is a few years in, and an actress who's been doing it for quite a long time. I thought they bookended each other really well. It's full of positivity, naturally full of honesty, and I'm going to go now and leave you to this episode before this cat winds us all to death. I will see you at the end. Please enjoy episode 29. It's a double shot of Two Shot Pod with Christine Bottomley and Remy Milner. I'll see you at the end. So we're up north now.
Yes.
And obviously this is where you were born and where you're from. Mm-hmm. But obviously you spent a lot of time in London.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're back up here.
Yeah.
Big changes moving up? Well, back up, should
it
I
is
say?
Big change. I've moved up. It's been 5 months now. I'm in a fortunate position. I have a place in London that I'm just renting out at the minute, so I don't feel like I've completely
left.
And obviously, you know, with work things, you're there quite a bit, and, you know, so it doesn't feel like a massive change, but I feel happier in the sense that, because I sort of made the move because my folks are quite elderly, really, so
yeah.
I felt that it was time to be up and nearer to them. So you know, we can get to London easy. You know, it's just a couple of hours, isn't it? And then, and what's important really is looking out, looking after whoever needs it, really.
Of course. And what's it like being back, going, oh, God, well, you're not far from where you grew up, really?
Well, I was born in Rochdale and then moved to the Stockport area sort of a bit later on. I was probably, it was probably about 6 or 7. It's nice to be back in the hood. It's nice. And I have a lot of mates that are sort of from my sort of school days, you know, and, yeah, and kind of even like from like Brownies, when I was at Brownies here and around this area.
They're still knocking about.
Yeah, like some of my oldest mates, and that, and that is, you know, it's lovely actually to get to see them a lot and catch up, and there's a good sort of support network here. And they're not, you know, actors or in it, but that's quite glorious, really. You know, yeah, I'm getting to catch up with properly with some of my oldest and dearest muckers, which is lovely.
You don't have to knock about with actors all the time. Not that there's anything wrong with
that. No, we do. We love him. It's nice to see you. I haven't seen you for a while.
Well, that's the reason I started this podcast. I just don't get to see a lot of friends, so I thought I'd come around with a microphone and talk to them. What were your parents doing? What did they do for a living?
My mum was a pharmacist, and my dad was a mechanical engineer. So he started off on the shipyards in Aberdeen when he was like 40. Well, he says every time he speaks to me about it, he gets younger, actually. he's like, I walked barefoot to the shipyards when I was like 14. I think that was the last age. But no, it genuinely was like sort of 14, 15. He was sort of kicking about there and grafting. And they were the first two in their family to go to uni and stuff. My mum went to uni and work up through the ranks, as it were. They're both like grafters, you know.
Was that the reason that from moving from Rochdale to the Stockport area?
What was the reason for that? It was probably, it was to do with my mum, and we moved into a chemist shop in Stockport, and we lived above in a flat there, and my mum helped run that chemist shop. So yeah, that would be the reason for the move, and probably a change in focus, because when we were at school in Rochdale, it was like, you know, sort of primary school time, and I don't think well, it took me quite a while to sort of get on board with the whole reading and writing thing a bit more, and I think maybe some of the schools up here, people thought they might be a bit better or whatever, but I think it was more me just being a bit not knuckling down. But
did you have your head in the clouds? Were you a bit of a daydreamer?
Yeah, maybe. I've always been like a people watcher, really, and an observer.
So you started young.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And that was gorgeous when we were up here, because we moved here because my mum's chemist shop, I just used to sit in the back on this little stool and just people watch, really. And
was it just you three, Chrissy?
And I've got a sister as well. Yeah, I've got an older sister. My sister is, she's 52 now.
Is she?
Yeah.
What does she do?
She's an occupational therapist.
Is she?
Yeah, so she's a real grafter, like working for the NHS, which Jeremy Hunt is trying to dismantle. And but we won't go into that, but I mean,
that's another very long podcast.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And I'm sure we're all in agreement about what we think of him.
We certainly
really
are.
But yeah, so she's an OT, and she lives up sort of in the Walkden area in Manchester. So
she works with primarily children.
It's elderly, actually.
Elderly.
Yeah, and she sort of does home visits as well, and I think it's predominantly elderly people that are really quite poorly and just sort of making the, you know, last bit of existence as comfy as possible, really.
You know, my son has an occupational therapist.
You're joking?
No, well, he has to go once a week because he's dyspraxic.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I didn't tell him.
No.
Well, it was just sort of...
I can't believe I didn't know that.
Well, it was kind of late last year when he was diagnosed, so we just... But he'd been going for a year because of something wasn't particularly hitting the mark with his focus. But no, he's just getting on with it. Oh. But he's doing really well. That's why I said, oh,
yeah.
He's your chill, because I've never known what an OT person does. And I thought, oh, well, they just work with children.
Yeah.
But I know they work with elderly people too.
Yeah. Oh, bless him.
Oh, he's a cracker. Don't have to worry about him.
Beautiful.
Speaking of children, school for you.
Yes, Craig. I was a model student. School, just, you know, quite a standard, you know, went standard.
Did you enjoy
junior
it?
Junior high school. I did. I met some my friends for life there, like really and truly.
Ones that you're still seeing now, you've moved
ones
back.
That I still see now. I wasn't big time into doing drama at school and what have you. You know, it was kind of, I did do drama GCSE and...
why was that?
I think it didn't excite me as much at school. I mean, it was more sort of like doing youth theatre and other groups outside of school. School was just kind of head down, getting through it a bit, really.
Did anything excite you at school?
did anything excite me at school? The people that I met, really. Yeah.
More of a social thing than
yeah,
academic.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, I got my GCSEs and I did all that, but it wasn't, I felt it was more kind of my extracurricular stuff, you know, literally like I would go to Stockport Youth Theatre, I used to love that, I used to...
When would that be the weekends or would that be...
It would be a couple of nights in the week and then you do like a summer course, a week summer course that was like no money, you know, it was next to nothing. And then that would be, you know, you've seen right for a week of the school holidays, which is brilliant.
So it was completely accessible for everybody. Yeah. You didn't have to...
I think it was maybe £1.50, a couple of quid or something for a good few hours. And we had this... amazing guy that used to teach us there, actually. And I thought he was on Twitter, and I do think it is him, and I tried to message him. I never heard back. But he was like, you know, we would have been like 13, 14, and he was like, he introduced us to Pinter, and we were looking at the dumb waiter, and
we,
you know, I remember me and my friend Jenna in this group, we were doing the dumb waiter, you know, and so two women doing that, and I remember him playing the Sex Pistols, and that was the first time I'd heard the Sex Pistols, you know, and also he was just the most incredible chap, really. I'd love to know where he is now, but...
So what, just going back to the drama at school...
Yeah.
Why didn't you connect with that? Do you think, obviously, it was because of the teacher. I mean...
No, I think we had cracky I think it was just, when you're at high school as well, you're kind of... I didn't feel as open to sort of
did you not feel
try
as,
stuff out there.
You didn't feel as free.
No, and you do like drama, and all the boys wanted to have fights. I'm not, you know, let's do this play about fighting, and then all this, and it would be more. That didn't really excite me as much as sort of getting out to youth theatre and meeting people that were really into it. Like
so, when you were doing the youth stuff, was this with? Other friends who were at school with you?
No, not really. Oh, a couple went. It was just something that I'd heard about, and I thought, well, you know, I'll try that. Not with a view of like.
So you had no view of thinking this could be a career?
No, not really. No, no. That sort of.
Did you have any inkling of something that you wanted to do when you were that age?
I don't know. I just know that it made me happy, and that made me feel like I fitted in somewhere, and that it would help me. Like, articulate my world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then the more and more I would do it as I got older, sort of at A-levels and things, I thought, yeah, potentially I would like, you know, I would like to go into this, but...
So you did it at A-level?
Yeah, I did A-level theatre studies.
And this was this at the same school?
No, this was at a sixth form college.
Right. Where was that?
In Marple.
In Marple?
Yeah, so you had to travel there, and then... And that was, we had really good teachers on that course. I didn't do very well in my A-level theatre studies, but it made me think, oh, there's so much more I want to learn. You know, you were getting introduced to, I remember we did The Maid, Jean Genet and all this, you know, and that was just bloody amazing. So then I thought, maybe I'll just try and keep playing for a bit and go to drama school and see what happens.
Was there somebody guiding you or opening that door and saying, do you know what, Chrissy, maybe you should think about furthering this
We were taught at our A-levels, there was a guy called Jim Capewell, who's actually an usher now at the Royal Exchange. I saw him, like, before Christmas. Yeah. And he, it was really lovely to see him. But, and he, you know, he was helpful and kind of, I think everybody was always saying, oh, it's really hard, you know, and it's really tricky to get into. But
what did you think when people were saying that?
Well, I sort of thought, I look at my mum and dad who work hard and my sister who works hard. You know, everything
you go, that's is tricky.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean? You know?
Yeah.
And then when you think about it and you kind of look back, then you sort of think, actually, yeah, I've always been like a people watcher from young and sort of, I don't know, I didn't necessarily think I'd be an actor, but something within the field of, you know, sort of telling stories or, but I never thought that I'd have a proper living from it or anything. You know, I never thought that it would, still don't really, you know, you can never take it for granted, can you?
No.
You know,
even after 20 years or whatever long it is.
Yeah.
But, so you finished your A-levels, and how did you do there?
I think I got two C's and a D. So I did psychology, theatre studies, and English. And that just, it just, it was just so text-based, and it annoyed me, really, A-levels.
It wasn't connecting?
Not really. But again, I met a great group of people there, so that was lovely. And then
every cloud.
And then I worked. And then I thought, oh, I'll try drama school. But of course, you know, you've got to pay for your auditions, haven't you? And get to places and what have you. So then I worked for a year in a pub and just saved up in order to.
So just purely to get down an audition?
To get down to the auditions, the travel there. And then if I was going to do it, with a view to just having a bit of extra cash behind me, really. Because so, I wouldn't say that. I mean, my mum and dad are supportive in the grand about it, you know. But they, I don't know. I mean, I think it was maybe a bit of a shock to them when I said, "Oh, I'd like to be an actor," you know.
Did they ever say anything like, "Well, you know, maybe you should have something to fall back on"?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they know that I'm quite headstrong, really. So that I probably.
What did you think when they said that? Did you go?
I thought, fair play. I totally get it. Yeah. You know, I do. I totally get it. And then there comes a point where they're just like, right, do you want, you know.
And did you have something to fall back on?
I'm still thinking. I like gardening, painting and decorating. Well, there's people that are far better at that than me. So, no, gosh. Been thinking about this a lot. I've realised that when going into the acting world and all that, and from a very young age, really aware that as a female in this business, that you get to a certain age and it gets trickier because stories stop being written, you know, for that age group of women. Yeah. Feels like that's getting slightly better, but really dawned on me the other day that, because a friend of mine over Christmas said, oh, Chrissy, you said that this is when it gets really hard. And I said, did I say that? And they said, yeah, you were probably about 26, 27. My friend who's a doctor, he was here, and he said, and I remember you saying, you know, that when you hit like around 38, that you probably, you know, that's it, it'll all stop and you'll have to get. And I thought, bloody hell, yeah. And it's, I don't know. I just thought, God, I was saying that at that age, you know.
There's that time when a script comes to you and you go, oh, God, I'm a dad.
I've not had that yet. I'm a dad.
Yeah, you must have had the mother, though, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
I know you are.
Oh, yeah.
God, I seem to have jumped 10 years. Anyway, let's jump back. So you'd saved up that money. You work at the pub.
Yeah, and then, so I went to drama school I went to the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama in Glasgow. And I think it's called the Conservatoire now or something.
What was your audition like? What was you remember your audition process?
Yeah, that was an all-day audition. And I loved it there because people were sort of walking around, you know, in the joggers that looked like they were working, you know, and really, I just got a really good vibe of that place. And also, it wasn't in London, it wasn't going to, I think it was £1,000 a year to go there, you know.
So it was considerably cheaper.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so, and my mum and dad are Scottish, so I thought, you know what, if I'm going somewhere and I can say, look, I'm going there and it's, you know, your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And a lot cheaper to live there, obviously, throughout the 3 years and what have you. And so it seemed, because I just couldn't envisage leaving and being, I mean, what people leave now and it's like, they can be 50K in debt.
Yeah.
Before, and I just, bloody hell, I mean, that makes me sweat thinking about it, you know, and you're just starting off and then it's, it's really tricky, and I couldn't have done that.
Did you get a grant? You must have
got help with some money, but it was, I think, the full student loan. No, I don't think I did get a grant. No,
yeah.
No.
Was that because they'd stopped it at that point?
Yeah, I think it was. Just,
you must have been on the cusp. Because I'm a little bit older, a couple of years older than you. And I know I was right on the cusp.
That must have been what I was taking into consideration as well. Do you know what I mean? You know, because, the London thing, I just didn't see it as feasible, really.
You don't have to go to London.
No.
You know, the amount
of people. When I think about it now as well, and people, and their choice, I mean, because it's just even more, I don't know, God.
It's funny that some people think that, you know, London is the be-all and end-all. And it isn't really, because there's lots of places to train. And, you know, there's certainly people I've spoken to who have been on the podcast who haven't trained at all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you don't. I trained because I was, like, absolutely thirsty for knowing, you know, I felt.
You needed the tools,
and I was a not kind of late to it. I was doing my youth theatre and everything, but I didn't know it. I didn't feel I knew enough. And also felt like that was kind of important to me, because I was sort of, otherwise I think I would have just not given it me all in certain situations or whatever, going up for jobs, you know, I just would have been paranoid or something, I don't know, of like, oh, I'm not quite good enough to be here. So that's why I felt, but my God, some of the best actors that we see haven't trained, you know, it's what works for, and
but in a way they do, because they're constantly training.
Yeah.
On the job.
Yeah. And London is, I mean, I suppose my point is, if somebody is from, say, Rochdale or a certain area and they really want to go to RADA, you know, you think it's kind of unfair that because it's cost such a huge amount of money that might no longer be a possibility to them, as we, you know.
No, it's terrible. But there's always,
there are ways and means.
There's ways and means, but you know, that isn't the only avenue.
Yeah.
Even though that might be your wish.
Yeah.
Financially, it just isn't doable, but there are other ways and means, because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Where are we? We're in Scotland. Yeah. Where back in Scotland are we?
Bonnie Scotland, Glasgow.
Glasgow. Love Glasgow.
I love Glasgow.
Brilliant.
Absolutely love it. Yeah, it's bloody amazing. People are gorgeous. I mean, I go back now. I was up doing a radio before Christmas. And
in Glasgow?
Yeah.
Oh, you lucky bugger.
I know. Oh, God, it was brilliant. And then I was getting time to, you know, catch up with people. But literally, there was one news agent, and the guy was like, all right, Hen, how's it going? You know, and I mean, I left like, what? God, I'm terrible with time. Well over blooming 10 years ago. Much more than that, isn't
much
it?
Much more than that.
Who am I kidding? 2000, yeah. Bloody hell. So, yeah. Gorgeous people there.
And it was 3 years in Glasgow.
Mm.
You settle in well?
I did settle in well. I missed kind of home a bit, which I didn't think I would. And
do you mean home, or do you mean the north?
The north, I think, a bit. And then, and getting back, because, you know, you're a bit skint, aren't you, when you're studying?
Yeah.
So it wasn't the train fare and all that. Like, you'd have to really think about when you were going back. So, you know, you could be, have long stretches of not doing. But I did enjoy my time there. I was probably like a proper geek there. I think if you ask people, I'm mates with everybody in my year, but I think I was properly like, because I wasn't at school really. And then I was just like, oh my God, I want to know about all this. And
were you just drinking it in? And
yeah,
down?
I was a bit. Yeah.
And we were having some fun as well?
Yeah, totally. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course.
That's a stupid question.
Of course, Craig. Of course. No, it was great. It was. And I think it was the right, because I had the year of working in the pub, I was really ready. I think sometimes you can go and you can be a bit too young, you know. And
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, since I've started doing these, because it's a question that does come up about, well, when are you ready?
Yeah.
You know, you're ready when you're ready. Not, and I don't regret anything. But
how old were you when you went?
I was just turned 18.
Oh, yeah, you're baby.
And I thought, you know, if I'm looking back on it, I do go, bloody hell, I didn't even know who I was. Mm. You know, so in the past few years, I've worked that out.
Yeah. Still you know, doing it, aren't you?
Still, always you're constantly doing it. Because yeah. You're constantly failing and constantly learning. But no, I didn't really know. But then you go, I can't regret it because I wouldn't be sat here right now talking to you in this moment if that hadn't happened. So you can't really change things. But yeah, I understand what you mean about, you know, what is age appropriate?
Yeah. And we had some just great people in our year. There was a guy, Peter Robertson, and I think he was 35 and he'd started his training. And just like a real grafter and had to save up to study there.
We had an older guy in the house and he was like 28, 29. Yeah.
Such an honour to be around people like that. Yeah. Because that is so brave, you know.
Yeah.
And you learn a lot from people like that.
Had a completely different other career and another path and went, you know what, I need to try and fulfil this, what I really want to do. It is incredible just to do that and jack it all in.
Yeah.
So the 3 years, did they fly by?
They did fly by. Yeah, they did. They did fly by. And I sort of learnt a lot. And then I was like, right. And then I really thought, right, that's it. I'm never going to bloody work. So what can I do, you know? And then...
Why did you think that? Did you think that because you
not in a negative, you know, not in a...
Were you looking at other people who were graduating and going, oh, they're having a tough time?
No, I just sort of thought... I don't know. I just, because you're constantly told, I mean, that's one thing. You're constantly told it's so hard, you will never work, you won't, you know. That's, the RSAMD did say that quite a bit. And I think I did say to a tutor there, you know, there is telly things going on, you know, the telly's on every night. There's something, things are being made. Maybe we could just give an inch of hope to people a bit.
And how was it when you graduated?
It was, it was sort of kind of ploddy along. You know, my first job I got was in EastEnders and I was still at drama school. But it was playing like some... What was that? It was like a waitress that had... I did have an affair with Martin in it or somebody anyway. It's one of the young kids in it. Not young, but... And that was a few weeks shoot on that. And it was when they film away from Elstree. So we actually filmed in Soho, in the middle of Soho. And right. I'm like this waitress. And my first scene, I'm bringing out these loads of drinks to Martin and this other character that was in it. I can't remember his name. And I was like Mrs. Overall, you know, with this tray of drinks, like, hello, like trying to really style it out. And was probably incredibly hammy. Oh, God. And then from then on, you know, it wasn't too bad. It wasn't too bad, you know.
Did you get an agent straight away?
Yeah, I did, yeah. Yeah. My first agent was with Jonathan Alteraz.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah.
How was the year? How many people were in your year?
About 26.
Did everybody get agents?
I think more or less. There's one girl, Beverly, who... She was, oh God, a brilliant actress, and she trained and everything. And then literally the day after we graduated, she was like, right. And she just got a totally different job.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. She was just like, no, I mean, and she was great. And
I've
everything.
Done that now. I want to do something else.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah.
And do you know what roughly the percentage of people that are still doing it from your year now?
Probably about probably about 60%.
That's pretty high, yeah. Actually.
Yeah. I really feel you left that place with your tools to get on and just a really good work ethic, really. You know, I'm pleased that was my choice of place. My nephew is an actor now, and he went and studied somewhere, and I was like, go, you know, audition for there, and he didn't. And then after he's like, oh, I wish I did. And I was like, I did say. Because it's just, I'd recommend that place.
If you had a good experience there, you've got to pass it on. Have you been back up since you graduated?
I've been in there a few times, in the building and what have you, and then last time I went, there was a lovely woman that used to work in the drama office, Val, and she used to give really big cuddles, and she had massive boobies, and she was like this really big beauty, you know, like a nana figure that when you were studying. And she sadly passed away, and it really, she was just this woman, Val. I mean, people who went there, they'll know exactly what I mean, and you just thought Val was going to live forever, you know, and forever be in that building, giving cuddles and being really kind and what have you, but sadly not. So last time, sent me under a bit of that Val, God rest her soul, is no longer around.
Chrissy, how do you deal with when things aren't going to plan? Not that you have a plan, but how do you deal with dry spells and when scripts aren't coming in, meetings aren't coming in? Because when the power is taken away.
How do I deal with that? I think...
Do you keep yourself busy doing other things?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not... Well, you know what I'm
yeah.
In terms of, I'm a bugger with my phone, aren't I? Sometimes I but you know, as in, I can be, I don't sit by the phone.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
No.
So I will be, and also, I mean, I absolutely love what I do for a living, and I love it, but it's not my world. It's not my entire world, you know, and there's a lot of other things that, are a part of my world that are really important as well. So, and I tell you what, there's a good, I think it's different for actors, and I might be sort of slightly speaking out of turn there, but I have a good support network of women in this business, you know, that are, we sort of look out for each other a bit, really, and I'll be always talk about stuff, really, and be very honest. You know, it's, I think if you have dry spells, I think it's really important to talk about that and not, but that can be hard for people, I suppose. And
I suppose you've got to speak about it with like-minded people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because not everybody's going to understand.
And I think people, it depends how you orchestrate yourself in life. You know, people might think, oh, I don't want to say that because that's my currency, and it seems like I'm not busy for, you know, the next month, that I'm not as desirable to employ or whatever. And I think that actors should give themselves a break about that, because it can just, that would just send you mad, really.
You don't have to pretend that you're mad busy all the time.
No.
I was listening to an interview with Laurie Metcalf. Do you know Laurie Metcalf?
Yeah.
Brilliant actress.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And she's been nominated for this new Greta Gerwig film.
Yeah.
You know, she's one of the fans of Steppenwolf, and he's amazing history. And the interviewer said, so, more movies coming up? She went, nope.
No.
She's not been offered anything? She went, nope. And, you know, that honesty from somebody so well respected, certainly from my point of view. And she went, no, I'm going to go and do a play.
Yeah, amazing.
I mean, fair play, she's going to go and do a play with Glenda Jackson.
Oh,
so she's doing all right.
Yeah,
you know, but she said, you know, yeah, I'm getting nominated for this film and everything. And he said, do you like films? She went, no. not particularly. No. I don't like the waiting around. I don't like this. And she reeled off lots of things that she didn't like about it.
Amazing.
And I think honesty
is
like
the key. And I think our... I'd like to think I'm quite a good mate, if you know what I mean. And I've spoke to people that have had really quite, you know, blue times as actors that haven't worked. And I've just been like, you know, you have to have something else as well.
Yeah.
It cannot define you. And also it doesn't help you, you know, when you come to work, if that's all you're kind of thinking about or whatever. I don't think, you know, because there's a big wide world out there, isn't it? And we've got people, I don't know. You know, a country. I mean, I'm not going back to the NHS, but there's all sorts going on in our political slant at the minute. And you just think, wow, you know, we need to. But I think it's really important for people to have the conversation. I think it's getting better now because I think that there's a lot of actors. Equity did a survey and it was quite shocking to, you know, see about actors' mental health and what have you and where people were at. And I hope that gets better because that needs to be.
I think it is slowly getting better. Certainly, friends of mine and people, even who aren't friends, who come on the podcast who I talk to, they're very, very open about dark days.
Yeah,
and how they deal with them, and how they get better, and how they hopefully don't fall into that hole again. But you know. Never say never. You never know. You know, you just have to deal with one day at a time, don't you?
Yeah. One step at a time, little steps.
I was talking to somebody the other day about auditions and about how they've learnt to... They go in, do the audition, come out of the room, it's gone. Are you good at that? Or have you learnt to be better at that? Or are you still...
Yeah, you know what? It depends where you're at. If you've got the mortgage to pay, you know, and you go, that one is going to help me out. If you're in that scenario, then it's harder to let it go in sometimes. But in terms of striving to get that job, if it's a part you think, I bloody love to play that and I really want to, I am quite good at letting those go.
Yeah.
Because... There's such, the decision-making process is so massive. You know,
and it's out of your control.
It's out of your control and you can't, you drive yourself mad. You know. I remember actually somebody, Vladimir Miradan, who was our old principal at RSAMD for a wee while, and he said, try and leave it behind you at the door when you walk out and it'll be the best thing for, you know, keep you functioning happy and healthy as possible. And there's something to be said for that, definitely.
Yeah.
But it's hard if you're, you know, in a situation where obviously, you know, we all need to pay the bills. And
of course.
Particularly if people have families or they're looking out for people. It's. But I do try and do that, yeah. Because not really part of the decision-making process. And
you can only go in there and
serve give it your shot, give it your best,
And then, it's a time thing. I think you do learn that over time. And if you're just starting out and you're doing that, then hats off.
Yeah.
That's incredible. You should tell people how you do it and pass it on. I was going to say, that's what I was going to say. Have you... noticed a change over the years within the business? And I only say that because I was talking to another actress on the podcast. A fair few.
Yeah.
And they've said, I have noticed a change. I went for that audition, I went for that meeting. I went in. I still haven't heard. Nobody ever told me anything. Nobody told me about anything. And also, and it was, might have been me or it might have been Rebecca Callard.
Mm.
No, sorry, not Rebecca. It was Amanda Abington. I may have brought it up. About this Americanized way, which is perfectly fine, especially when you're auditioning for stuff in America, you get off book. But now, you've got to be off book.
Yeah.
So already off book. How do you feel about all that?
Yeah, it's massive now, isn't it?
It's funny how it's changed.
Yeah.
Certainly over the past maybe, I don't know,
I've sort of always had to do that because I'm quite dyslexic. So I used to be quite envious, you know, people that can have a cheeky lockdown in meetings or what have you, you know, back in the day, but I can't do that anyway. So it's sort of, I've always had to do that really to get a shot at something. But it's really hard when stuff comes in, you know, last minute, yeah.
How do you deal with that when...
Well, sometimes I just say I can't do it really, unfortunately, which is a real shame, because even if you just get an extra, you know, like 12 hours or something, you can, you know...
You can drill it.
Have a better crack of the whip. But, but young actors are sort of more trained to that now, aren't they? They can really get their head around sort of just getting 12 pages off book really quickly.
I think so, yeah.
Which is...
But I know of a very seasoned actor who we both know, and I remember he was asked... say on a Tuesday afternoon to be off book for the next day, and it was like 14 pages.
Oh, wow.
And he went, I've got kids. Yeah. I can't, it's not going to happen. You need to give me some time. And anyway, they did give him some time.
Yeah.
But to ask that is a big... Yeah. Is a big
shout. Probably appreciate... you know, it's good to say that, isn't it? Because you're wasting that time slot, really, if you go in and you don't know, you know.
And also, it only looks bad on you if you go in and you do a terrible job, because that's what...
Because I have done that once, where I've gone, you know, and you just think,
again.
And it's just, no.
Because it only
Because you leave a piece of your soul there,
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly, reflects badly on you and your work.
Yeah.
And you have to go, that isn't what I'm about.
Yeah. I'm just looking at Griff, he's brought his own tea. It's like I've not even given him an actual brew.
No, he takes his flask everywhere. It's a good in case he gets...
Disturb, I can...
Well, really?
Everyone should carry a thermos at all times of day. You can sit on the couch and ask
him. That looks like a posh one.
It's his new thermos. It's
his first outing.
It's very nice. It's very nice. But it's good that these questions are, you know, being asked and coming up and hopefully for the better of everybody's...
I think so. And, you know, not with any sort of pitchforks and anger. Just, you know, these questions need to be asked because people are asking the questions and people want answers.
Yeah.
You ever thought about giving it all up? Seriously? Not in a flirty way. But in a, do you know what?
You know, I've probably flirted with the idea, but... Not really. I tell you what, I mean, I think I fell into acting because it helps me articulate who I am. You know, it's my way of making my way through, like, everyday life as well. And I think that if I didn't have it, I'd really bloody miss that, actually. I don't know what I'd do. So no, I haven't seriously.
But you're happy where you're at now, and where your journey so far.
So far, life can be a bugger, can't it? But it can be. You have to go through it, and you have to
learn from it.
Yeah, and then I'm happy with where it is right now at the end of this bleak January. No, I am, though. I am. And I think that, hopefully I'll still be bloody 90 and being wheeled out a little bit.
I'll push you, Christy, don't worry.
If you would, love.
Oh, no worries. Christine, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, darling.
You know, this is the first time... No, this is the second time we've ever recorded from a theatre.
Really?
Yeah.
In a dressing room?
Yeah, we're in a dressing room. Look at that noise, you can hear it.
Yeah.
Who is it? The first one was in Home, in Manchester.
Oh, I love Home.
Have you worked there?
No.
It's nice, that, isn't it?
But it's really nice, yeah.
How do you find Sheffield?
Nice. Yeah.
Have you got some grips with it yet?
Not really. We've been in the rehearsal room a lot, but... It's really funny because my family are from Doncaster And so they're from, yeah, Doncaster, Bradford, Huddersfield, but I've never actually been to Sheffield.
You don't sound like you're from Doncaster.
No.
Where was that kicked out of you?
No, I didn't grow up there. I grew up in Streatham.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I'm a South Londoner, but yeah, my mum and dad are from there. Most of my family still live there.
Yeah. So is it nice being back up here around this
yeah,
area?
Yeah, it is. It's lovely. It's so nice.
Good people.
Great people.
Great theatre.
Went in the main space for the first time yesterday. It was brilliant.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, massive.
I haven't been here for ages. The last time I was saying to Griff, the last time I was here, we came to see Hamlet. And I remember it was in the summertime because we were having a drink outside and you couldn't do that.
Definitely not summer now. Freezing.
It's freezing.
It is a bit of a shock to the system. Snow.
Is this your first time being away from your sort of home area doing a play?
No, I've done more regional theatre than I have at home.
Have you?
Yeah.
You find it all right?
Yeah, I really like it. I love it.
You suppose you just go where the quality is, don't you?
Yeah. I guess I've been lucky to have good parts. So I've really, really enjoyed it. But also, you know, it's good to get out and explore a bit, isn't it?
Especially in January.
Yeah.
So tell me about growing up.
So growing up was kind of split between London and Doncaster, I would say. You know, summer holidays would come round, go up to Doncaster, run around in a field, go back, go to school.
And this is you, your mum and dad, brothers and sisters?
Sister, younger sister.
Younger sister.
Katie, yeah.
How old's Katie?
She's 23.
23.
Police officer.
She's a police officer.
I know.
Already at 23.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Just become one. Yeah. Just passed all the training.
Congratulations, Kate.
I know. Well done, Kate. Yeah. It's amazing.
Good relationship with your sister?
Yeah, really good. Very different. We're very different.
In what way?
We're just so different. She's very linear, and if she doesn't want to do something, she won't do it. Whereas I could probably be a bit more open, you know?
So she's stubborn?
Yeah.
And so would you take after your mum or your dad?
Probably dad. Yeah. We like very different things. I'd say I was probably quite academic.
Oh, were you? Because I was going to talk about school. What was school life like for you?
Yeah, I think I was a bit of a geek at... I am a bit of a geek at heart, so I really liked school. I mean, I found it... Basically, I changed schools in year 9, so in the middle of secondary.
How come?
Well, I went to the Brit school.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So the first secondary school was a bit meh. It was a bit boring. I wasn't really interested in the subjects. But then when we got to Brit, everyone's so... I mean, you do all your normal subjects alongside whatever arty one you choose.
Tell me about the Brit school, because I don't really know that much
about
it.
Oh, it's great. It's an amazing place. So you apply, you audition, you do workshops, you have meetings with the teachers. It's quite hard to get into. I think it's even harder now. So you choose your strand, your core subject, as it were, art, drama, dance, media, singing, music.
Right.
And then you can go when you do your GCSEs. So you do all of your GCSEs alongside. And the days are just a bit longer, so you can cram it all in. And then... Or you can go for A-levels and just do your subject or do A-levels alongside.
Long days, much longer days than normal.
Yeah, long days, but you just stay there for ages because you love it so much.
Did you board there?
No. It's free. It's a state school. So people just come from all over the place.
Just to go there?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's
and
really cool.
Did you work weekends as well?
No.
So you would go to the Brit school from what age, really?
14.
To pass your A-levels,
yeah.
So to like 17?
17, 18,
18.
Yeah.
And did you stay till you were 18?
Yeah.
Because you love it, obviously.
Yeah, loved it. It was just great.
Obviously found it fulfilling.
So fulfilling. I think the way it's run, you have got students bouncing off the walls. The canteen is the kind of place where people are, you know, someone might just jump up on a table and have a little dance and a sing. Right. You know, it actually is that kind of place. But the teachers are just, you know, even if you're having an English class, the teachers are so enthusiastic about what they're teaching you that you're just drawn into it and you just become so engaged with them.
I suppose they've got to be amazing. A certain type of teacher.
Yeah, exactly.
To be there,
yeah.
Whatever subject.
If people are there for dance and then all of a sudden, you know, you're in a science class, I guess.
It's got massive highs and extreme lows, and I suppose they've got to keep an even keel.
Yeah.
So you saw a big difference in the teachers from the other school
totally.
To this one.
Totally. Yeah. Like English, never used to like English. And that must have helped alongside doing the theatre, you know, all the English lit side. We had this amazing teacher called Miss Nelson, who people who listen, who know Brit School, they'll just know. She's such a Jamaican teacher who just like filled you with, energy and enthusiasm for absolutely anything and everything you read. So how incredible is that?
Well,
it's amazing.
What it is rare.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Because it doesn't happen a lot, does it?
And they care, they really care.
Again, very I think it's quite rare.
No.
Getting onto one about teachers or anything like that, but you know, you have to go with your own personal experiences, don't you?
Yeah.
So did you know from a young age that this is the path that you wanted to travel then?
Well, I was a dancer. I did some ballroom and Latin dancing for 7 years.
Did you? From what age?
From 7 to 14. It probably stopped being cool.
Where did and that then, come from?
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I'm not sure.
Your mum danced?
Well, we went to a local place in Streatham and did it. So maybe... I know where it came from. I had a childminder whose son was doing it. So that's probably... I got into it like that, yeah. Loved it. Got to 14. Not really cool. It was before Strictly and everything, so you know.
And also, you're changing at 14. Your tastes are changing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I just used to dance with my mate Nadine. So it was it was just a fun thing. And then it got quite, okay, now it's serious.
Right.
And then I didn't really want to be dancing with a boy, I don't think.
Boys.
So just dancing with my mate. So yeah, I was a dancer. And then...
At 14, what did you 14. Feel that you wanted to do? Or did you just want to be, a teenager?
Ooh. I mean, I remember this dance. I guess it was a musical theatre class that I went to with my friend.
Yeah.
And I was being the Artful Dodger out of Oliver, which I loved. And I just got this new sense of, you know, not just dancing, speaking, and how fun it was.
Yeah.
And then Brit School on top of that, and all the encouragement you get from that, I was like, let's go.
And you're obviously learning lots of new things at the Brit School as well.
Yeah, loads of new things. And it was it's so much about life. I learned loads about life and about having a strong friendship group. But you're lucky because I was creating stuff with them.
Yeah.
So it was all interwoven. Being a teenager was creating random stuff and staying after school and making shit. Yeah.
So then you leave the Brit School at what age? 18?
Yes, 17.
17.
Was, yeah.
And you'd done your, did you do your A-levels?
Yeah, I did French and English alongside, which was quite hard work.
But you did all right?
Yeah. I love French as well. Love languages. So, I love that.
So where next?
So then I had a year out. Applied for drama schools, didn't get into any.
Right.
Which I'm so grateful for that happening. Had a year out. Worked.
What did you do with the year? Just work?
Went travelling.
Where did you go?
Went around Europe.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Interrailing. Brilliant.
On your own?
With my boyfriend at the time. Didn't really have a plan, we just went.
Yeah.
And Yeah, just hopped from city to city. It was amazing. How
good
cool
to have
is
a
that?
Year out. Because when you got rejected, how many drama schools did you apply for?
I think I applied for 6.
And what did that make you feel like at the end? Did you think, no, I'm going to, did you think I'm going to forget about it? Or did you think I'm going to have a year out just to reevaluate?
Yeah, I think it was that. Yeah. I think the Brit School were really good at talking to us about how, you know, the realistic.
And also you were 18, 19, weren't you?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. It's really hard to get into drama schools.
And, you know, and sometimes not essential.
And yeah, definitely not sometimes essential. I think you don't need to go to drama school. I think they can be great. I think you find out loads about yourself, which is great.
Yeah. But you find loads about yourself in life anyway,
yeah,
don't
exactly.
you? So you come back from a year of going around Europe.
Yep.
Any plans?
Back into auditioning.
For drama school?
Yeah.
Oh, so you decided you were going to go get
I think I always knew that I would do that.
And were your parents fully supportive about...
Yeah, they were really good, yeah. I think my mum was a little bit more hesitant than my dad.
Right.
But, yeah, they're really supportive, yeah. Yeah.
And so where did you audition then?
So I auditioned for 4 places and then ended up going to Bristol, Old Vic.
Lovely Bristol.
For 3 years, yeah. Which was great. Bristol's amazing.
It's a great city.
So good. Had the best time.
Made good friends there.
Made great friends, yeah. Really great friends.
And did you have any preconceived ideas about what it was going to be like?
Well, it
having spent all that time at the Brit School, did you see a massive difference?
Yeah, massive, massive. The Brit School, they just kind of, not that I'm comparing, but
it's just different.
Yeah, different times as well. Yeah. You know, you're a young teen then, and then you're later on. It's like Brit would hand you, they'd just give you responsibility to create what you wanted. So they'd say, okay, this is a voice assignment. We want you to make it about this. No detail. Just like encouraging you to cook up something, anything of your own, which was brilliant, so brilliant. And then you get to drama school and it's a bit more straight-laced and this is how it's done.
Yeah.
And actually you need to pare it back and think about how you're walking and talking and breathing and all these things that you thought you could do naturally.
And it's all about the layers.
And it's just a bit... Yeah, that was a bit of a shock for me.
And before just jumping back to when you were auditioning, did you have anybody helping you with, like, your pieces? Or were you just...
Yeah, I remember going back into Brit.
Oh, did you?
And working it a bit there. They're really supportive. That's good. And doing it with friends.
That's great. You could go back there and all like that.
It is.
Like,
it's that
the door
kind
was
of
always
really
open policy.
Yeah, it is. I'd go back there now and just say hello.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So how long is it since you left the Brit School now?
So I left in 2005.
Right.
Did I? No, 2000. Yeah. No, 2000. And when did I start Bristol? 2008. So yeah, 2006, 2007. Is that right? Everyone's maths is shit. We need to go back in the classroom.
One thing we know about interviewing actors. Although no, actually, somebody who was quite good at maths. I'm going
to
say.
Do you know what?
Miller,
I used to be really good at maths. Let myself down.
So you're 3 years at Bristol.
Yep. Lots of singing.
Lots
hadn't
of
done
singing.
That before. That was
you
a
weren't
very...
doing any of that at Brit School.
No. And it's funny because my best friend is a singer. Was a singer in the school, so we're constantly surrounded by it and supporting her in stuff that she does, and loads of other friends and people who are in musical theatre. But it was never something that I did so technically. So doing that side of things was really, I found it really scary.
Really hard as well.
Yeah, I remember singing a song and literally just standing up in front of the group and just
it's
shaking.
Terrifying, isn't it? I remember when I did that the first time and I just felt
completely
naked.
Exposed.
Really exposed.
Yeah, it's funny because I've had to sing in quite a few plays actually, but since graduating, but, it's a different, you know, you've got the character now, and you've got yeah.
So any low points in during the 3 years then?
Oh yeah, loads probably, yeah. Confidence. I remember finishing the first year and just feeling like I had nothing to offer really. Like you've just been stripped back so much, which is what we know that they like to do.
And then they start to
And then
build
they add on
together.
All these little tools that you can use when you go out into the world. Which, yeah, I do get, but obviously at the time you just left feeling a bit empty.
Did you feel stronger for having that year out? Did you think, oh God, if I'd have got in when I'd been rejected, you might not have been ready?
Yeah, oh gosh, yeah, so happy. And people who'd had longer out, you know, all done other degrees and come in and studied. You just think, yeah, great. You might have asked a few more questions. I mean, we were quite a challenging year anyway, so that was quite nice.
Wait, why were you such a challenging year?
We didn't say yes to everything, and we kind of flagged up some stuff that we thought should change.
You still like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a really
good... Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
That's a really, really... I forget the word. Anyway, we'll come back to it.
I think I can be quite a moral person. So sometimes I don't mind speaking my mind.
No, I think that's really... I think that's good, positive.
Especially if it's for the good of the group, you know?
Yeah, and also if it's something you believe in.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, you know, as we all know, if your gut's saying one thing, then it's, you know, the gut's never wrong. That's where the decisions are made. Well, certainly where mine are anyway.
Yeah, definitely. So, agree.
End of the third year, and you're leaving. You're about to do your graduation.
Yeah.
How are you feeling at this point?
Love showcase. Loved it.
She rolls her eyes.
Loved getting dressed up and doing the shake. No, I didn't really. I didn't. Yeah, it's funny because you do your 3 years, and even then, like choosing pieces and maybe them not being quite right, and you're still discovering yourself, aren't you? And then you go and stand in front of people, and we sung lots of songs and did lots of dances, which I think is great. It's great to know that you have those skills, but at the time, I was a bit like, oh gosh, it just feels a bit weird.
Did you not feel it was you?
No. It's a bit more musical theatre-y for me.
And did you speak up at the time?
No, it was a big military operation, so, and years of...
Things like that are hard to speak up to in that situation, because there's a lot of pressure.
There is, yeah, there's loads of pressure. Yeah. I remember there's just a shift in energy towards the end. Naturally, because people are probably feeling a bit
anxious
about heading out into the world, as it were. But yeah, sometimes you don't really know until afterwards either, do you?
No. Well, on reflection, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why did I wear little heels?
Probably because you were told to. It's a good idea, Remy. Stick those on. All right, okay, you've done this a lot of times, and this is my first one, so I'll be grand, I'll do that. So you leave, and did you get an agent straight away?
I did, yeah.
And how was that for the whole year? Did the whole year get picked up, or was it a bit more...
Well, people had loads more attention than others. Mine was kind of, I did have attention from someone, but then I was kind of hoping to keep myself open for any other goodies that might come in.
Yeah.
But then they never came in, so it's like, okay, yeah. Whereas some people could, you know, be picky. And rightly so, they're great. I guess it's your first introduction to the world.
At Bristol, were they quite, I don't want to say negative, but were they quite honest with you, like, as a year, saying, right, you know, you're going to be going out there now, and it's hard. A lot of you probably weren't going to work. It's probably a lot of rejection. Or were they more, you can do this, it's going to be great? Were they more filling you with...
I think they did fill us with a sense of what it will be like. I remember that you create this marketing pact, which you go out with, and that's what you can do, what you can use and look to when you're not working. But I think at that time, you know, you've just done 3 years at drama school and you're like, I am ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. Woo-hoo! You're like a little jack in the box.
Yeah, big time. Mm. So it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's like, how much can you prepare? And should you prepare yourself for that? I mean, you should, but also it's nice to have that kind
of... The thing is, you know, people can say as much as they want to you, and it can be the truth. It doesn't matter, because at the end of that, probably that third year, you're not listening to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're
ready to go. I was ready to leave, yeah.
Of course, you're ready to go. Look, I've got all these tools, I'm ready. I can show you exactly what I can do. I can do this, 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 and this. And sometimes it's misdirected.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just the way it is when you're leaving.
Yeah. And also I wanted to get hold of some juicy parts, or like some fun parts.
Did that happen straight away, or was it trickier time?
Yeah, one of the... gosh, it's such a long time ago, 2011, yeah.
It's not that long.
I know. But, yeah,
I graduated in 97. 1997.
It's funny, because one of the first jobs I did... it wasn't a big job, it wasn't a big role at all, but just what I was surrounded by was incredible.
What was that?
That was, so it was on The Hour, and it was in this smoky, like a meetings club.
Mm.
And everyone was there, and, you know, there was like black people, white people, mixed race people, all like having cigarettes and drinking and stuff like that. Just this really... nicely set up scenario, which for me felt completely real. You know, you walk into this little wonderland, and I didn't really know, I hadn't done filming before, so I didn't know what to expect. So I was just learning loads and just kind of looking at the pros, soaking it all up.
And seeing what they were doing.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Loved it. And I think I literally had like 5 lines.
It's all right. Is that one of your first jobs?
Yeah.
That'll do.
It's all right.
You got to start somewhere, haven't you?
Yeah.
I had one line, I think.
Did you?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I think mine actually got cut to one line, so, you know.
They always do, don't they?
Yeah.
And because you seem to me like a very up, very positive person. You seem very happy. I know we're meeting here and you're in work and you're in a rehearsal. You've just come from rehearsal.
Yeah.
But do you deal with the darker aspects of the business, the times when things aren't going well? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because it can be so, it's so up and down and so unpredictable. I think basically I cannot not be busy.
Oh, you're one of those. Yeah, no,
so
I understand.
As soon as I'm not acting,
you're doing something else.
I make myself too busy, probably.
And what do you do to make yourself busy? Or does that change?
All sorts of stuff, yeah. All sorts of things.
Just so you're not sat around thinking or doing something.
Yeah.
You need to be on the move.
Yeah, I think I'm quite like that anyway, you know, to sit down and... You know, by the end of a film, I'll kind of be twitching to, you know, go off and do something. Unless it's in the cinema, and then that's lovely.
Unless it's a rubbish film.
Yeah.
And you have to leave halfway through.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Talking from experience.
That's my own personal experiences.
But probably going in and out of work exacerbates that. But also hanging on to the fact that you can't just, you know, you can't, when you're working, you can't just, that's not your uptime. You have a life. So you feel it. There's so much stuff you can do. I know it sounds a bit wanky, but it's true, isn't it?
It doesn't at all.
Reminding yourself of that.
And also, at the end of the day, we've all got bills to pay and we need
to
do things you know, for our creativity and release that, because, you know, that's what you do. But it ain't the be-all and end-all. It's not... there's life.
Yeah.
And in that big circle there, this, well, I'm doing a bit of acting, but there's so many other things to do.
Yeah.
Your life shouldn't be all-encompassing about the work, I don't think, because otherwise it can eat you up.
Yeah.
And how do you deal with auditions?
I quite enjoy them.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah, I love being sent something, and yeah, it's almost like you are starting your kind of first day of rehearsal, you know, picking it apart, or your prep period of picking it apart and getting into the world and your character's head. Yeah, obviously I get nervous. And some go much better than others, and you know, it completely depends on who you're meeting. Yeah. And sometimes you might, you know, you walk in and have a great chat. I had one recently where I thought I would walk in and have a great chat, and it really didn't flow. It wasn't happening. I was like, oh.
Yeah, because you can project all you want about how something's going to go.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't go the way you
think. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Are you good at walking out of that room and leaving it there and switching it off? Because that's one thing that's cropped up with a lot of people.
Yeah, it's great to do that.
That's great in theory.
It's great in theory, yeah. Isn't it? And again, it varies, especially if it's something you really want.
All the more reason to. Yeah. I know.
And you're trying not to think about it, but then you kind of do start thinking about it.
Of course, it's easier said than done.
Yeah. Funny, isn't it?
It is a funny old game.
It is a funny old game.
And I know that this probably isn't a question that I should be asking someone who, you know, is relatively kind of new to it all, really. But do you see yourself in this for the long game?
Yeah.
I kind of knew you were going to say that anyway.
Do you know what? I could see myself kind of still doing it, but branching off into other areas or aspects of it.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's just as interesting, and that kind of fuels your work, being aware of what other people do.
Because you're still within the creative world, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's loads of different areas, isn't there?
Exactly. There's loads of things to do. Because we know that it is really, I mean, it is difficult.
Yeah.
And I do think of people, you know, the stories now of trying to get into drama school and how hard it is and how expensive it is. And in some cases, you know, how elitist it is.
Yeah. All up for a better mix in drama schools.
Well, you'd think, wouldn't you? And I think things like that will happen in time. I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, they should. Yeah, they have to. It's otherwise, not the real world if it doesn't happen.
No, exactly.
And that's, yeah.
So how long have you got now before you open this play at the Crucible?
So we open on the 9th of February.
Which, by the time this comes out, you'll be up and running.
Exciting.
Are you looking forward to this?
Yeah, really looking forward to it.
Is it all women cast?
It's all women.
Directed by a woman?
Directed by a woman, written by 2 men.
Interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
That is interesting. Have they wrote well?
Yeah, great. It's great. It's amazing because it spans over, it starts in 84, goes to 2002, and then ends up in 2016. So it goes from miners' strikes, Queen's Jubilee, to Brexit. So... There's loads in there.
All bases covered.
Yep.
Remy, this has been brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All the best.
Thank you very much.
And that is another one down. I really want to thank Christine and Remy for, you know, giving up their time. It's funny, when I was doing all the interviews last week, I was really thinking about the episodes and going, God, this is quite a big ask for people. I mean, I don't ask people for their stories. I just ask people for their time. And time's precious, but also what's even more precious is really opening up. And some people don't know me when I go and talk to them, and I don't know them. So there's a real trust element to it. So, yeah, I really want to thank them both. For Christine, you're letting us into her home, getting the kettle on for us. And for Remy, finding us a little space at the Sheffield Crucible where she's rehearsing her play. And also, yeah, for time, basically. It's just for people's time. It really means a lot to me that people say, yes, I'll come on and have a natter. Speaking of natters, next week is episode 30, and crikey O'Reilly, you're going to need a strong stomach, all right? That's all I'm going to say. There's, yeah, okay. I think, if I'm right, producer Griff went slightly green, a bit of a story for next week's, but I will see you next week for that, all right? You know where to find us. We're at Two Shot Pod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We are twoshotpod@gmail.com if you would like to drop us an email. We always read them. We always love getting them. It's really interesting, very interesting emails, actually. Positive stuff. People being very honest in their emails, which is always a good thing. Lee, you know I'm talking to you. Thank you for that email, man. And if you're in Liverpool tonight at the Baltic Social, I will see you there. Producer Griff will see you there. Our kid will see you. And Ingrid Oliver will see you. Well, that's about it. I'm sorry I've been a bit blathery this week. Things are good. I'm very excited. So, until next week for episode 30. I've been Craig Parkinson. He has been Producer Griff. And this has been the Two Shot Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. Look after yourself. If it's cold, wrap up warm. And I shall see you next Thursday. Take it easy. The Two Shot Podcast is presented by me, Craig Parkinson. Recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. Our music, our brilliant music, is courtesy of Then Thickens. Cheers.